Hi, this is Craig James, Senate candidate for the United States Senate, and Rick Santorum's number one fan in Texas. I've heard rumors that you can count this podcast listeners that aren't in Reeve Hamilton's immediate family on one hand, but I know better. This is where the movers and the shakers in our state get the inside scoop. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the magic that is the weekly TripCast. Here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TripCast for the third week of March. Joining me is CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
I want to be known today as Evan Moose Smith, since the Craig James endorsement by Daryl Moose Johnson is certainly going to turn this Senate race around.
Well, and we have executive editor Moose Ramsey.
It could very well turn around.
Ross Moose Ramsey.
Why not? Yeah, great.
I'm waiting for the Gary Hogaboom endorsement, you know, if we're going to pull names out of the air. That's who I want. So.
And Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune is also here.
You think Vince Young will get into this? maybe he'll endorse. That would help Craig James carry the Austin audience.
Let's just sit here in silence and wait for that to happen.
Maybe the crickets that resulted from that joke
cricket sound effect,
will endorse maybe by the time this is over.
Wow.
Good start, Ben.
We are going to talk about the news of the day, which is the Wendy Davis extreme firebombing. We're going to talk about the 2012 races.
Not too soon to be joking about a firebomb race?
I said it was extreme. That's not a joke. And then we're also going to talk about the state of ethics in Texas, and which, since I just received a failing grade from someone, Ben will fill us in.
A D plus.
Well, I guess that's not failing.
Barely passing.
That's two things I've already exaggerated on. So let's start with Wendy Davis. Her office was hit with a Molotov cocktail yesterday.
Pseudo-Molotov cocktail, yes.
Molotov mocktail?
Mocktail, there you go.
Is that what it is?
But, you know, basically it seems that it was a somewhat unstable homeless guy that did it. He told the police that he had aliens in his rafters, which, so to give you some insight into
his pretty good
thinking.
Description of about half the people in politics, isn't it?
It's also a great debut album.
Yeah, exactly.
Aliens in My Rafters.
But, you know, she took the opportunity last night in a press conference to call for civility. But is there anything really to take from this lesson?
No.
This is not Gabby Giffords. I mean, this is not a person who, and that person was very unstable as well, but they talked about politics and everything, and you know, people have drawn some connections there. This is a homeless man who had issues.
Was there any indication that this was politics?
Other than he visited the office
before? See, that's really the issue. The issue is, yesterday when people were speculating about the provenance of this attack, they were saying, right, well, this is related to the women's health program, it's related to abortion and everything else. This is a deranged hobo by the description of one person online, and I don't know that you can take anything more from this than that.
Right.
There are crazy, troubled, occasionally violent people in the world who do stuff. And he might have bombed the Worthington, he might have bombed TCU, and instead he bombed Wendy Davis's office.
Being a public figure sort of opens you up to that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, just this sounds like it. Just having a public office opened him up to that. I mean, there's. It's obviously a very serious thing. I'm not saying that it's not.
Yeah, none of us is making light of it.
I'm just asking if it's was this a politically motivated thing? Is this something as a political matter that we ought to be interested in, or is this just you know crime blotter?
The fellow who walked into Dan Patrick's office 18 or so months ago with a gun.
Right, and that thing.
I mean, it's a similar deal. There are some sick people in the world. They do some sick stuff. We should acknowledge that there's a sickness. But I don't know that you can identify that. I mean, I gather that Davis's office, according to the Quorum report, is fundraising off of this incident.
Right, and I got two emails before the press conference from Annie's List, which raises money for Democratic women running for office.
I guess this is to be expected, although I don't know how I feel about it.
Is it weird that people... You know, we've gotten to a point where if something like this happens, people's first reaction
is to think it must be.
That must be a political attack by the other side because they're crazy.
Oh, okay, well, no, that's a better question maybe,
right.
and that's a good question because the reality is no. We live in a world in which an attack on Wendy Davis's office on political grounds is plausible.
Right.
The plausibility of it is the problem with the world.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she's been deeply involved in a bunch of really controversial issues. And those are the kinds of issues, women's health certainly, I mean, are the kinds of issues that in spots around the country over the years, you've sort of seen violence here, weirdness there, protests there, you know, those kinds of things. So it was, you're exactly right. It was plausible that was the thing. If this had happened, I'll just pull one out of the air because he hadn't been involved in anything hairy recently that I know of. You know, if this had happened at John Corona's office, everybody would have said, "What's that about?" They wouldn't have immediately leapt to the conclusion that, you know, somebody was coming at him.
Well, I'm not sure because Corona is attacked
for being moderate.
I mean,
well, he is.
We're going to firebomb all the moderates' offices. Yeah. We're going to firebomb exactly no offices in Texas at the moment. Right. No, I think that the world of politics has gotten dangerously crazy in a lot of ways, and that craziness is on both sides. And it's plausible that these kinds of things occur. Thank God nobody was hurt. Not just Todd's mama, but other people were not hurt. And thank God. That it was nothing more than just a crazy person,
Wendy Davis.
It's a legitimate question to ask, though. Could this have been? And the answer is, of course, it could have been because it has been elsewhere.
So, what Wendy Davis said last night, though, even though it was a crazy person, I guess what she said last night still stands in that, you know, we should think about our dialogue and, you know, not foment.
Well, let's go tactical for a minute here, right? She has an opportunity to take the podium away from Mark Shelton for probably a week with this thing. We're going to talk about this thing. We're going to raise money with this thing. We're going to talk about civility in politics.
It's going to last a week?
Maybe. And everything that he says attacking her for whatever position on whatever thing, she can tie back to this civility argument. I mean, you know, this is tactically advantageous to her.
Well, events do certainly change political races.
Right.
Well, let's talk about...
It's not going to change the composition of her district.
That's true.
He didn't firebomb the legislative maps.
That's true.
He firebombed her office.
So let's talk about races and the legislative maps and that sort of thing. So now our 2012 picture is pretty much set at this point.
Yeah, like we suspected, the big races we've got a bunch of big races in the primary in districts where there's not going to be much going on in November. So, you know, Republican versus Republican. An easy example is Jeff Wentworth and Elizabeth Ames Jones. There's an open Senate seat just north of Wendy Davis's seat in Tarrant County. There's some spots around like that. But it looks like we had 30 members who aren't running for re-election in the House. We have another 30 or so who don't have significant opposition.
Right, some people we can already congratulate.
I think it was 7 senators and 28 House members have no primary opponents, no general election opponents. So lobbyists, pucker up.
Right.
It's time.
You know, this is always the case. I mean, about half the legislature doesn't have a race. It's sort of interesting, you know, for all the noise that the dramatic races attract. You know, about half the legislature just kind of coasts in.
Does that mean, is it too easy to just sort of coast along?
It can
well,
be.
My question was, and we saw this a little bit in 2010, but do we have a whole lot of rhino hunters out here in 2012?
We have a few.
There's one in whatever district the speaker is in.
Yeah, Matt Beebe.
Matt Beebe. He's got his pith helmet on. I mean, you know. Let's start at the top.
And he may have Dick Armey money with him.
Tell the art department we need a pith helmet shot.
Matt Beebe. Jacob, if you're listening. Look. I often say in talking about the Tribune and the rationale for us doing what we do that the real impediment to progress in this state on both sides is not gerrymandering. People think that's the incumbency protection program, the impediment to change. It's lack of engagement, that people out in the world not knowing stuff about what's going on in the Capitol. That's the real impediment to change. You know what? Actually, it's kind of redistricting also.
Well, right.
I mean, the reality is, you know, the ill-gotten fruit of our political system is this. You have all these races. You got 7 races in which there's essentially no opposition of any kind. You've got 7 races in which the people are more than that on the Senate side.
Yeah,
I think it's 14 of 31 was our total from the Texas Weekly story.
Right.
14 of 31 in which no opposition or essentially the district is so heavily weighted in the favor of the incumbent's party that person not going to get beat.
Well, or in favor of the incumbent.
And that's what I've been thinking about with all the blow up recently over things like the women's health issue or just any of the arguments that are being made on the Republican side by the candidates running for president. I just wonder how much any of that actually could affect any of these local races. I mean, the fact that you've got a large population in Austin that is going a little nuts over the women's health program. Yeah. I can't see that having any impact
education,
on...
Education cuts are more likely to have an impact on some of these races.
I could see that actually making a larger impact in a district like, say, Paul Workman or Donna Howard than the women's health program.
Well, to some extent, this is where the redistricting argument falls down because, you know, the redistricting argument determines to a large extent whether a district is competitive in the general election between a Republican and a Democrat. But a lot of these races that we're looking at are competitive in the primary.
Right. Because March is November, or May in this case.
Right. So, I mean, if you're in a Republican district, that doesn't mean you don't have a race. It means that you probably don't have a Democrat. You know, we have this brand new congressional district 25 that goes, this is the famous one that goes from Hays County all the way up to Fort Worth. It has 12 Republican candidates in it. You know, we have some...
12.
Yeah.
12.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, not right. all of them are named Williams, shockingly.
Right. Yeah. Only, yeah.
Only two of them are named Williams, as far as we know.
So, you know, a lot of these races are going to be competitive because redistricting has moved the... You know, if you're an ambitious person and you want to run in one of these races, you got to run in a primary. So maybe you switch parties or whatever, but you're going to run as a Republican if you want to be in CD 25.
And yet... As much as we talk about how redistricting makes the notion of progress or change less likely, at the same time, add to the 34 new to politics or new to the legislature people who entered in the 82nd session, at least 30 instances of incumbents retiring this time. You were looking at north of 60 members of the 150-member House
right.
as freshmen or sophomores. We will have not only a budget deficit, but an experience deficit in the next session. You will have six key committees at least with new chairmen in the House. You'll have four committees right. in the Senate. Well, you have two key vice chairmen right. in the House at least. You're going to have a lot of turnover.
Could you not say that what you will have is a large number of fresh eyes looking at these problems that some might say have not been dealt with adequately over the last
well yeah
sessions.
You could, and some of the people that are in this group are going to be stars. I mean, some of them are going to turn out to be stars, but they're not yet, and they don't know where the bathrooms are yet. I mean, they got to take right. a couple of sessions to figure out what's going on over there before they really can play in an effective way.
Took me several the two sessions I
to find
spent
the bathroom,
over
yeah,
there
right.
I'm still looking for the bathrooms.
Well, mostly that's because we were telling you the wrong place.
Right. It's next to the it's next to the swimming pool. Right?
Yeah, Philpott is such a bully.
But I think that's you have this interesting kind of dueling narratives. One is there's no change because nothing is competitive. The other is everybody's bolting for other things, and so right. you know
it's a redistricting year, and in redistricting years, however they go, there's always a bunch of turnover. You know, we got four senators who've decided either I'm out of here or I'm moving up.
When was when was the last time that you had as much turnover in the Texas Senate as you're fixing to have?
Well, the Texas Senate just doesn't turn over.
You know, you had Elliot Shapley
leave.
You had Jose Rodriguez enter. He, by the way, has no opponent this time.
Right.
But this time you're looking at a minimum of four new faces, all more conservative, as we've said on this
right.
podcast.
But they're not new
they
in the sense that they haven't been in the legislature before.
No, but the composite – look one of the I think undertold, not untold because we've told it, but one of the undertold stories of the 83rd session is going to be the degree to which the Senate is going to become the House. The Senate is going to become significantly more conservative because as a percentage of the membership, replacing Mike Jackson with Larry Taylor, replacing – Chris Harris, say, with
Kelly Hancock.
Replacing Wendy Davis, if it were to happen, with Mark Shelton. Replacing Steve Ogden with Charles Schwertner.
Jeff Wentworth with Elizabeth
Potentially
Ames
replacing
Jones, right.
Jeff Wentworth with Elizabeth Ames Jones. I'm forgetting. Replacing Florence Shapiro with Ken Paxton.
Right.
You are talking about a body that is going to be significantly more conservative.
Yep.
What will Dan Patrick's role be in that body?
Well, I think he'll be the
moderator. Chair of the education committee.
He'll be the moderator.
Exactly.
You know, I think that he helps to be the leader of that conservative group, you know, and that's actually sort of
But I think chair of the education committee as a ramp up to his running for lieutenant governor in 2014.
Depending on who gets, you know, who gets the lieutenant governorship. You know, whoever the Senate elects to be lieutenant governor is going to name those committees.
Did you hear that Patrick had a fundraiser for LTIF within the last week?
No, I didn't hear that.
I heard some rumor. I cannot confirm that that is the case, but it was said to me yesterday that Patrick had a fundraiser for LTIF. I suspect that what Patrick's role is going to be is the kingmaker.
He wants it to be.
He wants it to be, and one of the ways he gets that Education Committee chairmanship is to deliver the conservative bloc, which at the moment is him and Birdwell,
right?
But could conceivably be larger when the timing of this whole works itself out. I mean, I think Patrick is a kingmaker.
It's interesting. I mean, the Senate will behave like the House if for no other reason than they're having a speaker's race over there.
Well, they are.
Right. And
maybe more of a speaker's race than there's going to be in the House.
Senators lay out of each other's races. I mean, this, you know, it doesn't in the House, there's always some interference in everybody else's races, and that's certainly going on this time. But in the Senate this time, you're starting to see things like this. You know, if the Patrick L. Tye thing turns out to be true. I mean, there are little bits like that all over the place, and it's because there's a race for lieutenant governor going on.
It's pretty interesting.
And what do we think about the people that have been out of the game and are just itching to get back in?
We have 10 House members who have served previously, right, who lost in 2010, running again. They all won't all win because you got Chris Turner and Paula Pearson running
right
in the same
right
race. But you have – so you got potentially nine people returning if they were to all get elected.
Do you think they looked at it and thought, well, this is supposed to be a more difficult session than the last one I did?
What a great time to get back in the House.
No, I mean, this is one of the rules of politics. If you get knocked out in a wave election like 2010, you know, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you got to look at that and say, wow, that was a big – tidal wave thing. They were, you know, whatever it was, they won seats they didn't expect to win. If you're one of the people who lost a seat that your side didn't expect to lose, you look at it and say, okay, so if this resets to normal, I can win that seat back.
Right.
Plus, I'm running against a freshman who hasn't established him or herself in politics. So that's an easier candidate to run against in some way. So if you want back in, this is a perfect time to do it.
But the two people who I expected to run who had lost the last time, and we're not expected to lose.
And those were?
David Leibowitz,
mm-hmm,
and Lil Solly. Lil Solomon.
Solomon Ortiz.
Both are not running.
You just like saying Lil Solly, don't
I
you?
Do. Also a good album name.
Right. So we get,
name,
you know.
Lil Solly.
You know, he didn't run, so he didn't have to hear you call him that
call him
on every
Solly
week on the Tribcast.
Right. One of my favorites, because this is turning into the Hatfields and McCoys, is Al Edwards is running against Boris Miles again.
Again.
And it's fantastic.
Is that not great?
It's like, first Edwards is in office, Miles beats Edwards,
right.
Edwards beats Miles, Miles beats Edwards, and here we are again.
More consecutive absurd narratives than the Rocky movies.
But this is
the one with Brigitte Nielsen. This race, right?
Right.
That's it.
But it's also, they're not, milquetoast characters to follow. Both of them bring a certain pizzazz to the race.
No matter which,
and at least one weapon.
It's fantastic.
No matter which
it's
one great gets in, we're bound to get Daily Show coverage.
That's right. That's what we strive for here
I
in
just
Texas.
Look forward to all the interns misspelling Boris with one R
right
for the next 6 months. No, it's going to be great. I mean, Al Edwards and Boris. I mean, how great is that?
It's fantastic.
It's great.
It's fantastic.
That's my favorite Rocky and Bullwinkle episode.
It is?
Al Edwards and Boris.
So let's talk about the state that they're getting into, if they do manage to get into it.
If you rise to the level of corruption, then...
Yeah. Then you can be a member of the Texas government, which recently received a deep lust on its ethics from who, Ben?
Well, this is it's called
from this, Ben.
Yes, I
Ben did
I,
it himself.
I just kind of stuck my thumb out and said, "Yeah, let's see. What do you know?" This is from it's called the State Integrity Investigation. It's a project by the Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity, and then I come in because Public Radio International, which is a public radio distribution house.
Bunch of freaking
also,
communists.
Yeah. Yes.
They're the ones behind
Ira
that
Glass.
Mike Daisy thing, right?
They are. Yes, they are.
Let's just talk
Ira
about
Glass.
That.
This entire podcast is fabricated.
That's the only reason he wanted actually was going to let me bring up this comment so that he could, this topic, so he could jump on that.
So do you apologize for the This American Life episode?
I'm not a PRI employee. I don't know what to say.
We should say that Evan's little scoop about Dan Patrick was unsubstantiated.
I acknowledged it when I said it.
Okay.
He did.
Let's move on.
All
what
right
did the PRI tell us?
So they did. They had 330 different data points they looked at, and they did this real extensive look at all 50 states and how they ranked on corruption risk. So this is not how corrupt a state is, but based on the laws that are in place.
If you wanted to be corrupt, this would be a good place to do it.
That's right. Exactly right. So Texas gets a D+. That ranks them, unfortunately, a D+ ranks them 27.
This is the point. How could you be 27 with a D+?
If you grade on the curve, they could actually pass.
Right. They're probably doing pretty well on the curve, right?
Well, they actually have passed.
Yeah. Nobody got an A.
They get away with it.
New Jersey.
The highest. Right.
Wait a minute.
New Jersey is number one.
New Jersey's number one with a B+.
Oh, my God.
An 87.
Maybe Chris Christie
who's
will
worst
come in on the brokered convention
South
after
Dakota
all.
But you know who
I
also
thought Georgia
is,
was worse. Georgia is not worst?
Georgia is...
Georgia's the bad big
Georgia's
state, right?
Next to last.
Georgia is near the bottom.
Yes.
And so really, we should be celebrating this.
And you know, we're like a couple of tenths behind Minnesota.
It's a gentleman's.
A couple
it's
of what's behind
D+.
Minnesota?
Right.
Tenths.
You said point. Tenths.
Tenths.
The back of the middle of the pack
word.
Is is sort of
I
where I, sort of where I was in my high school rankings, and I did okay.
Reeve, the Texas of Vanderbilt. What is that?
Reeve Hamilton now under review.
But yeah, exactly. D plus has been used in the same sentence with the name Reeve Hamilton previously. But
so, what does this mean?
So, I mean, what does it mean exactly? Well, you know, well, there are subgrades, right?
Yeah. What's bringing the average down?
Let me hit all the Fs. We get an F for access, public negative. Access to information. An F for executive accountability. An F for state civil service management. That's whistleblower stuff. An F for state insurance commission, and an F for redistricting. We get an A.
What's the insurance commission thing about? What's going on there?
Well, surely the redistricting is an F. Go back to the insurance.
Okay, hold on.
I think redistricting was remarkably smooth.
Well, the public information thing is interesting because actually there have been findings about Texas that don't square with an F. Previously, I mean, right. other organizations have judged Texas's access to public information to be better.
But
than
But they're judging it relative to other states. Maybe all states are F's.
If you're trying to, I mean, Texas, as states go, Texas isn't bad.
Well,
you know, for public information, we've had pretty good luck most of the time.
Gubernatorial email archives notwithstanding.
Well, I mean, there's always a glitch, and you know, whenever you, right. I'm going to say this gently, but whenever you deal with a police agency, whether it's on the local or state or national level, they are stingy with information, and DPS is no exception here.
You know, I think that
they're going to be at your house in about 2
That's
morning
fine,
tonight.
You know? And we'll make a public record of it.
What a lot of the low scores are based on is the fact that the implementation of the laws in Texas just don't work very well. Texas actually receives a B if you look at what's on the books to help minimize the possibility of corruption. And we get about a 53, I think, when you look at how all that is implemented. So I think we're the fourth largest implementation gap, as this report calls it, in the country, and that's what a lot of the public information stuff is. There are laws in place. In reality, in practice, can you quickly and easily get this stuff? And is there an avenue for redress? Not exactly, mm-hmm. because if the agency says we want to appeal to the AG, and then the AG says no, you have to give it to them, and the agency says well, we're going to sue the AG's office, then your only redress is to get a bunch of money and go forward with a lawsuit and try to win it in the courts. The other thing that they harp on a lot in Texas is that we just don't have in practice very good laws that look at conflict of interest.
We have terrible laws for that.
And so, right. and you were talking about the state commission. That's where you know we got a 31 on is the state insurance commission protected from political and special influence? We got a 12. on are there conflicts of interest regulations covering members of the board or senior staff of the insurance commission? So essentially the answer is no, there aren't. And that's
right.
And that's where a lot of Texas is.
Wasn't there a deal where the insurance commissioner had a fundraiser? What am I remembering?
Yeah, the new Eleanor? Insurance commissioner from South Carolina.
Kurtzman is her name?
Kitzman. Had a fundraiser attended a fundraiser up at the headquarters of one of her regulated companies up in Irving.
And there would be why we got an F, or you know that's.
Well, I just think
it's her fault.
You know.
Well, I mean, you know, there's this thing. This always comes up in these kinds of stories. When you're doing these kinds of stories, one of the defenses is, well, yeah, I did that, but it wasn't against the law. And if the law is, you know, sort of defective, that's not a great defense. I mean, there are a lot of things.
It's equivalent to she was dead when I got here. Right. I don't know that I've ever thought that was a good answer for anything.
And you know, it's.
I'd like to know how that came up.
nothing to see here. Keep walking.
Do they do this over time? Have they done this before? Because it'd be interesting to see if our grade is which direction.
Are we
our grade
appreciably
is
better or worse?
Right.
This group has not done it before. I mean, you
specifically did they do it in 1999? I guess
no.
So come back next year and we'll visit again.
You know, one of the arguments on this stuff is that if you're an honest public official, whether you're appointed or elected, and you're an honest public official and you're doing everything right, there's not enough disclosure and transparency in some of these laws to protect you against claims that you're not doing it right. I mean,
that's
it doesn't look any different if you're cheating than if you're not. And that hides the cheaters, but it also
Unfairly impugns by implication the
everybody
honest,
else, right? Like, so a classic example of this was when, you know, if you look at the Texas Supreme Court, Tom Phillips, who was the Chief Justice for a long time, you know, was sort of big on this. If you look at the Texas Supreme Court and you look at the money, you know, they run for office, they collect money, and it turns out that the people most interested in who's on the Texas Supreme Court turns out to be lawyers.
Right.
It turns out to be lawyers who have business before the court. There's no way for a judge to protect him or herself from a claim that you took this money from this firm appeared in this case.
Because the recusal laws are extremely weak, and that's
right.
One of the things they make a point of in the study.
Right. It sets you up for a character attack.
Same thing in the legislature. You do not have to disclose that you have an interest in a business unless you have 51% interest in the business.
Right.
So... But if you've got 49% interest in a company that is set up to make millions of dollars, if this bill that you're carrying gets passed,
right,
and you don't have to disclose that.
But some of it's generalized. I mean, there's any number of lawyers over there voting on law all the time.
But I'm sure that the people that heard the story did not take away from it, oh man, the honest politicians are really getting cheated.
No,
here.
What they took away from it is, God, public radio communists hate Texas. Why do you hate Texas?
I think that's about right. But one interesting thing about this is I've started, you know, I was talking to some of the different watchdog groups in town, you know, so what are the things that could, you know, is there, this is not an easy fix, but are there some things that the legislature could do in the next session that would dramatically change the grade one way or the other? And they said, yeah, Ethics Commission is up for sunset review.
Right.
If they don't get that right, we could be at the bottom of the list next time they do this.
But are there things that they could do within that specifically to the Ethics Commission?
Well, give the Ethics Commission a little more teeth is the answer that I've been getting from people. You know,
yeah, if you...
There
if
are
you,
eight members on the panel.
Four Democrats, four Republicans.
And you have to have six, is that right?
Right.
Six to be able to investigate, to start an investigation. So it's almost impossible. You know, it all has to be complaint-driven. They're not looking for anything on their own. People have to file complaints, and then they, you know, it's almost impossible to get six people to say yes.
It's designed exactly the way you would design a protection racket. It's designed to keep these things under wraps, out of the public eye, and to keep politicians out of trouble. And at the same time, to look like they're obeying ethics laws, because that Ethics Commission is over there watching us. It's not a knock on the Ethics Commission, but they've written this law in a way that covers their tails.
But the politics behind it, surely both sides could get their constituents behind giving the Ethics Commission more teeth.
It seems like it's
a big Tea Party thing too. I mean, they want honesty.
Yeah, but the
government.
Fact is, the people who would have to make the decision to give more teeth to the Ethics Commission are the people who would be most negatively impacted by it if they got into the sauce.
And the only
but I'm just saying, it's purely on them. They don't have to say like, oh well, it's not a politically.
You ever wonder why the taxi rates in Washington D.C. never go up? It's because the people who would be most harmed by those taxi rates going up are the people who have to vote on the taxi rates going up. I mean, it's the oldest thing in the world. They're self-regulating.
Yeah, we only change ethics laws with a poster child. We only change ethics laws when there's some scandal going on and the public is demanding that these guys vote in a way that they wouldn't vote unless if the public wasn't making a demand. The public's not really paying attention to this thing.
Hey, make a demand to Todd that we end the podcast.
No, we still got a few minutes.
Oh, cool.
But I did want to talk about...
It only seems like we've been here for a year.
Could we just mention one other sort of executive accountability thing that I think is interesting and transparency?
So you going after Evan?
No. I think the... have you guys been following this sort of Facebook war on the people behind the abortion sonogram bill? Basically, so now you can... Since people can just sort of access the public Facebook walls of politicians like Sid Miller and the governor...
Right.
You have all these women that are getting on and asking sort of for health advice from them since...
Personal hygiene advice,
providers,
right?
And women's health providers are at risk and of right. being shut down. They're saying, well, since I can't go to that, why don't I just go to you? And they post in great detail their health problems.
The,
I think it's hilarious.
NPR had a little blog post on it this morning, and the quote that they pulled from Governor Perry's website was a woman asked, Governor Perry, I'm going through some really horrible halfway through my menstrual cycle cramps. Is that because, am I being punished by God because I didn't get pregnant this month? That was the question.
But he did not. He didn't respond. You'll be surprised.
No,
to learn.
Of course,
I think
NPR,
they shut down his
of course,
Facebook
NPR picked
for
out that one.
No, they. Said,
no.
That's kind of the run of. The, if you read these things,
that
that's kind
of
the cleanest one.
Yeah,
that is one of the more mild ones. So it gets much. It's just, you know, it's a funny window into the future of politics.
I'm fair and balanced.
But this is what social, I mean, social media gives you more access to these people. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, it's also, you know, this
interesting.
Well, yeah, and
maybe,
funny.
Maybe for shut-ins like you who have nothing else to do.
I do think it's interesting it's that, you interesting. Know, Governor Perry's Facebook site has essentially become a dumping ground for those that really dislike Governor Perry ever since the Strong ad came out. His site essentially melted down with anti.
Yeah, you reap what you sow. I mean, the fact is, you take a controversial position, whether you're the governor or somebody else, and people, it's direct democracy.
Right.
Right? Nothing wrong with that. That's
so did anything, kind of, just on this topic, do you think anything came out of last week's Doonesbury attack on Texas?
A lot of good publicity.
Publicity for Doonesbury.
A lot of people in the country thought, there's still a Doonesbury? Yeah. That's what happened. I thought that thing was canceled along with Tank McNamara or some other.
Well, I did.
But actually, the Doonesbury strip is sort of what started the first time I saw this whole Facebook wall post thing was when Sid Miller posted the Doonesbury thing featuring the fake Texas politician Sid Patrick on his wall, and he mentioned Sid Miller said that he was the author of the bill behind this.
He did say he was the author of the bill. Yeah.
That's PBS. I don't understand.
If you have kids, you might get that joke, I guess.
Well, I am curious watching this issue whether this turns into, obviously it's news, but I'm curious if it actually turns into an election issue. If this actually.
It would have to stick around for a while.
This candidate elected against that candidate. Yeah.
We have always said on this podcast and not on this podcast that pitchforks and torches are not the exclusive province of the right.
Right.
The fact is the Tea Party could very well be replicated as a model on the left if the left could get itself organized. And whether it be on education or on the women's health program or what have you, there's an opportunity for a movement from the left just as there was a movement from the right. Problem is... the state doesn't have a lot of people willing to organize at that level.
Well, on either side, on the left,
it's just not enough. And the activity
is not consistent.
It's
hard to put the right
together
for those things too. I mean,
but the right did.
But that sort of assumes that the Tea Party movement was good for the right, which
could you
I think
you want to argue that it wasn't?
No, I want to leave the podcast now. We're out of time.
Well, why hasn't Toddcast put up the time cues? Come on, Toddcast.
He never puts up time cues. We just end it when we end it.
He's playing Angry Birds on his phone.
No. But there's a section of the Republican Party that thinks that their party has been taken over. The old school establishment.
But the people in the pith helmets would say to those guys, go blow. The fact is that they would say the Tea Party has been great for the party.
Right.
Right.
Reinvigorated it, you know.
And the fact is, whether the left is able to marshal their forces on the women's health program with the education cuts or whatever else, whether that's the case, you know, these kinds of things on Facebook are interesting. I mean, it doesn't matter if it translates into something else. It could.
Right.
But it's interesting.
Right. Well, and, you know, we'll see, I guess, in these elections whether it manifests at all. You know, the other question is whether in Republican politics specifically, in primaries, you know, here or elsewhere, whether this gender gap holds and, you know, how much influence this has on the Republican race.
Well, stay tuned. Or if you have an answer to that question or questions of your own or comments or really anything, feel free to email them to tribcast@texastribune.org.
It is singular.
Yeah.
You didn't blow it this time.
No.
God, I had $50 on blowing again, so that's actually terrible.
You're buying me lunch.
Try and collect.
Yeah. Right after his presidential bets pay off.
Just be sure to mention cramps again, and then it'll be fine. So.
I don't know what to say after that. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, our producer Todd, I'm sure there's something here I forgot to say. Oh, I do want to say that I'm thinking about getting new intro music for the Tribcast. So if you... do that. You can also send it to tribcast@texastribune.org.
You want new music after 2.5 years? You want new music?
Yeah. I want you to. Well, we might have Evan just sing something.
What do you want?
Well, you'll see.
Get Robert Plant
Beyonce?
To do it?
Could Beyonce do something?
You want to get somebody
famous to
do it?
I want Robert Plant and Alison Krauss. Why settle for one? All right, anyway.
I just take Robert Plant.
Thanks for listening.
Stairway to Podcast, man. That's it. All right, coconut juice, call us into effect here.
And scene.